Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Second hour of Catholic Answers Live. I always like it when our second hour guest is even better than our first hour guest, and we pulled that off this time. With no offense to the first hour guest, but we got Father Paul Cech here this hour, and that is, you know, you've got an A-plus guest when Father Paul Cech is here. We're going to discuss the virtue, I don't know if it's one virtue or two, you'll have to tell me that, Father, of meekness and humility. I am trying to offend that virtue in Father right now, as you can see, by puffing him up as an A-plus guest. Just a reminder, Father is a priest of the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, more than 20 years as a priest there, and is now the rector of St. John Fisher Seminary there in the diocese. St. John Fisher, such a great saint. I love St. John Fisher.
The only cardinal ever martyred for the faith, at least thus far.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wonder, wow. That's impressive. He was, and I think, was it Thomas More who said he was the finest man in England?
Yeah, More had great respect for Fisher, knew him, wanted him to succeed Wolsey. Look, when we think of John Fisher, we often think of him in relationship to the king and, of course, Fisher's unwillingness to bend on the marriage and to bend on the papal supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
But we should also think of Fisher in terms of his relationship to his brother bishops at the time.
He was That's a bad story.
Yeah, well, unfortunately it is, but it was part of his heroism because he was alone.
Yeah, right.
There were 30 or 33, and he was the only English bishop who said, no, I have to stand fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that just adds to his heroism because he didn't have his brothers around him to strengthen him. So, yeah, a great man.
And a good name for a seminary.
It is an excellent name for a seminary for men who are preparing for diocesan priesthood.
So let's talk a little bit about meekness and humility, which we discussed this hour.
Oh, sure.
Those Christians and their, I am not worthy and all that. We hear these complaints about us. And as a matter of fact, our society is kind of a rah-rah society. The more I think of myself, the higher my self-esteem, the better things will be. I don't think self-esteem is probably in conflict with humility, but the way we teach it probably is. What is all this about humility and meekness? Are they the same thing?
Well, I think we could distinguish them, but before we get to that, let's look at why we're going to spend this hour on this topic. I don't mean to be presumptuous, but to say why this is so important to us. The reason why it's important to us is Jesus told us. On one occasion, I'm not aware of a second, he points to himself.
Oh, right.
And he in the language of today, intentionally indicates that there's something that he does not want us to miss. And it must have been in his mind somewhere that we would miss it, except for the fact that he's going to point it out.
I had never thought of that, Father. I know what you're talking about.
So in Matthew 11, where he says, learn from me, for I'm meek and humble of heart, or gentle and humble of heart. He's doing more than just pointing out a virtue that he lived and lived well, which he did. What he's actually doing there is he is pointing out, let's call it his spirituality. He is pointing out the form of his own soul.
Yes, okay.
He's telling us what is indispensable to Christian life, and he is telling us what is central to his own humanity.
So that we can be like him.
Even before the self-giving,
mm-hmm.
even before Calvary, even before the willingness to fail—
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should have done this one first. That's my fault. is humility. So why is this important to us? Why are we going to talk about it, make the distinction to the rest? Because Jesus Christ said, if you're going to be my follower, this is how you're going to do it. Learn from me, for I'm meek and humble of heart. And then we want the rest of that passage. You will find rest for your souls. My burden is easy. I will assist you. So contained in this is a divine promise. Here's the way I've lived. This is the form of my soul. This is my spirituality, kind of modern language again. And contained in this is the promise that he will then come to us, make his home with us, and assist us with the burdens of today. That's why this is so vital. Otherwise, it can just seem like something imposed upon us that we just have to kind of be the sort of, you know, what I'm doing here, trying to show. No. This is the vitality and the principle of vitality of Jesus' soul, humility and meekness.
It strikes me that, too, that, and I wonder if, just in you hearing you talk about it, it occurred to me that the kind of punishment, maybe it's the natural consequence of being cast out of paradise for Adam and Eve is laboring and being heavy burdened. And, and he says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy burdened.
Yeah.
That's how that invitation begins.
Which was a self-imposed burden, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because our first parents, when they lived in Eden or paradise, did not feel the burden or weight.
Yeah.
Of a fallen world or, of course, personal sin because it didn't exist. So a while ago, somewhere in our time together today, I said the most important thing that I can share with people is that Christ lived this intensely happy, fulfilled human life.
Mm-hmm.
That cannot be done without a humble heart. It can't.
I have to say, though, doesn't he give us some contraindication to that? Or let me challenge you with some.
Go ahead.
I mean, whipping the... the animals out of the temple.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
You know, he gets a little bit, some of his conflicts with the scribes and the Pharisees.
Good for you. Do you know?
Whitewashed sepulchres
right,
how is that meek and humble?
I'm so glad you raised that because that would be sort of an obvious objection, except for the fact that we misunderstand meekness and humility as being sort of cowering or reticent or quiet or hesitant.
Yeah.
No. Humility is truth. And the truth is that the Pharisees and the scribes and what was going on there in the temple were contrary to the reverence which is owed to God. So what Jesus went there to do was to restore right order. People, to include the scribes and Pharisees, were not worshiping God the Father properly. So Jesus didn't do that on his own behalf. He didn't do that for himself. He did it for the sake of the Father, who was not being rightly worshiped. And if humility is truth, then that can move us with magnanimity and with courage to undertake things like this because it becomes that vital principle. Again, that engine, again, our idea of humility, I mean, there is a sense in which humility and meekness are both gentleness, and that's fine. And Christ was gentle. Moses was considered a meek and humble man, and he was gentle, but there were times when his anger was aroused also.
Right.
So not all anger is sinful, and some of it is considered righteous and therefore worship of God. In fact, St. Thomas even makes the point somewhere that if I fail to get angry in a certain instance, I've been unvirtuous. You know, if I look out the window and someone is being mugged and I just say, well, somebody else will take care of that, and I'm busy here doing a radio show with you, no, I failed in virtue. That injustice moves me, or should, to get up out of this chair, go out there, and try to stop that wrong from happening.
I see. So you might think of the modern pro-life movement or the modern movement to, you know, care for the poor, the immigrants, all this. These are things that are done in humility, even though
because humility is not just truth, it's a strength.
Okay.
No one was ever more powerful than the Son of God, and I don't just mean because of his divine nature, but because of the way he lived his humanity, the power of his example. He was a virtuous man, and people were attracted to him for that reason.
888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. Father Paul Check, our guest again this hour. We're so happy to have him here with us in California, where we can talk face-to-face about these things. And we're discussing meekness and humility this hour, the virtues of being meek and humble. Which I'm gathering from what you're saying, Father, is quite different than appearing meek and humble.
At least as we would define them.
Yeah.
You know, think of the bishop in Les Misérables.
Okay.
So Jean Valjean breaks in to steal the the bread, and then he's going to take some candlesticks.
Okay.
I can't remember saying, but the bishop does is he says, oh, not just the bread. Here, take these candlesticks himself. Now, the bishop could have said, yes, this man broke into my house and been offended and was because this was an intruder, and he would have been in the right. But rather than to be vindictive or even just vengeful in the right sense, in the sense of retribution,
right,
he stepped back from that and he saw a way to reach this soul. And he said, gee, I forgot. I meant to give these things to you. And he told the police, there's nothing wrong here.
Yeah.
And in that gentleness of spirit, a conversion begins.
888-318-7884, the number. We'd love to discuss meekness and humility with you. I want to let you know that we still have that free MP3 up, though, and I don't want anybody to miss out on this, Confronting Contraception. It's a tie-in to the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. It's a conversation between Trent Horn and Damon Owens on contraception. The way you get it is you go to Catholic.com, you click the banner where it says free MP3, and you get a free MP3. That's all. We're not trying to trick you or anything. We just want you to have this Confronting Contraception. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on meekness and humility with Father Paul Cech right after this.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Every single day, I get to help our listeners of the Sunrise Morning Show wake up, find out what's going on in the church and the world, and then walk with them as we all seek to grow in knowledge and love of Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith. I mean, how could it get any better?
The Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swaim. Tomorrow morning, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teens spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett, your host, our guest, Father Paul Cech, this hour. Jesus was meek and humble. As a matter of fact, Father was pointing out in our first segment there that this is one of the times where Jesus actually goes out of his way to make a point, as if this is something you could miss about me. He's sharing about his own interior life when he says, I am meek and humble of heart. That he's inviting us to live that spirituality.
Yeah, he is being so presumptuous, if I can say that with reverence, to say, copy me here.
Right. Okay, so I almost feel like this might be a challenge to much of our current anger and opinionated bickering that we have in our political and cultural life. Is there something to that?
Well, I look, we should have a conversation peacefully and thoughtfully and charitably with anyone about anything.
Yeah.
But invective and emotion and insult and anger and deprecation, I mean, that's not a conversation. So there has to be a certain level of reverence and respect for someone else, and a certain level of self-possession and self-mastery and self-effacingness. Look, Jesus Christ never lost an argument, but that wasn't his first goal, I don't think. It was impossible for him to lose an argument.
Yeah.
He was more interested in not losing hearts.
Okay, I see.
So to enter into a conversation with someone, I want to speak the truth, but his first interest, it seems to me, was not in not losing the argument. That he wasn't.
Right.
He doesn't want to lose the heart. And that's actually a more challenging proposition, because I can win the argument and lose the heart.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I'll make a confession to you, Father, here. I'm not asking for absolution because we're on the air. But I have found that if I watch a lot of what's called news, I feel that I am less meek and less humble. I feel like I'm more opinionated and annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that our media life is
poisoned?
Destructive?
Yeah, I think to a large degree. I mean, there are things that we can watch that inform us without incensing us. But if I have a weakness, and I can, my passions can be aroused in this way.
Yeah.
And zeal for my Father's house should consume me, but it can go beyond prudence and charity, and there's a problem. Now, that never happened in the case of Christ.
Yeah.
But zeal, as important a virtue as it is a secondary virtue. It's always should be under the guidance of prudence in the natural order and charity in the supernatural order. So zeal is good. Mm. Prudence and charity are better. They're higher virtues.
Am I more charitable if I'm more humble? Do these things follow one
They do. Other? They will. Yes, that's right. And there will be a kind of a circular cause and effect relationship there. But greater humility will lead to greater charity. That's correct.
If you'd like to talk with Father Check about humility, 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-318-7884. A lot of times I find with Christians, if you start talking about humility, there's all the jokes about, oh, I'm great at humility. Or, yeah. I just lost the other one. It seems like we tease about this. And you can't really go, well, you know, I don't know. I've never heard anybody go, well, you know, actually, humility is one of my virtues. Like, it's not really one of those.
No, it's a tough virtue to acquire, and it's quickly lost as soon as I think, you know, I've got it. Look, let me commend to your listeners the Litany of Humility, written by Cardinal Mary Delval.
Okay.
It's probably the most difficult prayer in Christendom that I know, and it's intended to dissolve self-love. So I might commend that as a way to at least better understand the virtue and to try to strive for it.
I always feel afraid to pray that one.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It's one where you're like, maybe he'll, if there's ever been a prayer I don't want God,
to
really take seriously, it's that one.
Yeah.
So that tells you something about my spiritual state. But it is tough. Should we then... If Christ is saying to us, I am meek and humble of heart, if he's saying that that interior life of his is an interior life he wants us to join him in, should we have some gratitude for those who knock us off our pedestal
Amen.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Really?
Certainly under the rubric of Romans 8:28, God working for the good in all things for those who love him.
Okay.
Those can be occasions for us to grow in humility.
Yeah.
You know, we have an interior sense of justice, and a lot of it is fine. You know, from a very early age, children even know, they'll say, that's not fair. Right. They may be wrong about the object of their, you know, because one child was treated in a different way, and perhaps justly. But that sense of what I'm due can go too far, because I'm a creature.
Mm.
And as St. Paul says, what do any of us have that we haven't received? Well, nothing.
Right.
So as soon as I think of what I'm due, what I'm owed, my rights,
yep.
It could be going down a bad road. Now, look, that's not an invitation to be treated poorly. No, we have reason to be treated with dignity, so I'm not suggesting at all that we cannot say, look, that's not right. You're not treating me well. But that's also with a view towards the person who's misbehaving, because they're harming themselves, even if they don't see it,
mm-hmm.
and they're also offending God. Jesus said, which of you convicts me of sin? Now, that was an expression of his humility. You know, what have I done wrong here?
Yeah.
Now, he was right. So in that sense, we can reasonably say things like this. But when we start to say, that's not right, I should be treated better, that's not my due, we've got to look at that a little more carefully, because it may not be on a good platform, not be a good foundation.
Right. Okay. But I do want to, I will get to calls, and I'm sorry if, hold up, but I want to get to this one thing because I will forget to get to it, I think. There's always been this, when we discuss these type of topics, we will come up against the objection of be careful because of the battered spouse or mm-hmm. the abused child something like that. And and what are we saying to them?
Those people are victims of real, manifest, obvious, egregious injustice.
Okay.
And that's not pleasing to God. And it's not an expression of humility just to continue to place oneself or be in a circumstance where they're routinely abused. That's not what we're talking about here. That's a real physical, emotional, psychological, moral evil. What we're talking about here is quelling the unruly tendency in me that comes out of selfishness and self-promotion that's mm-hmm. contrary to the spiritual poverty that Christ proposes to us here. So, good. We need to make those distinctions.
888-318-7884, our number. We go now. We start, actually, this hour with Shane in Florida watching on YouTube. Shane, thank you so much for your call, your question for Father.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well, Shane. You have a question for Father Check?
Yes, my question is, you talk about humility and meekness, but a lot of times people say that, use that as an excuse to go back on their position. Let's say, for example, abortion, right? People want to be meek and humble, and so sometimes they'll backtrack on the position that abortion is wrong in order to be humble and to be meek and to be understanding. So how can we be humble and meek and still hold to the position of truth?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Humility and meekness are not weakness with regard to the truth, and they're not infidelity. They're not a lack of courage, cowardice, or failure to be faithful. When Cy brought up the example of the cleansing of the temple, I suggested that that's actually an expression of Jesus's humility because it's at the service of the truth. So humility is something that can lead to zeal for the truth and can lead to magnanimity of spirit because it involves self-forgetfulness. So I think that the challenge here for us is making sure we have the right definition of these things. To be humble and meek is not to be retiring or reticent or hesitant or insecure or uncertain about the truth or uncertain about what I'm supposed to say. Rather, it gets to my spirit and the way that I say things. Not belligerent, not provocative, but I can still say them firmly and with conviction. And that's not a failure of humility.
Does that address your concern, Shane?
So let's say from the example of abortion, how would you be humble and meek in that circumstance and still stand firm to the truth? Because sometimes I'll have issues when I speak to people. How do I be firm and meek and not provocative but still stand for the truth without being argumentative?
Sure. Fine. Argumentative is a good word. I think we can state the truth in a way that's not argumentative in the bad sense. We can say a life in the womb is a human life created in the image and likeness of God. It is an innocent life. It is a vulnerable life, and we have the obligation to protect it. And abortion is a grave moral evil. Mother Teresa, gentle and humble soul that she was, St. John Paul II, humble and gentle soul that he was, both called abortion murder. That's a very strong word. So we can refer to what they say. Now, in the same moment, we also have to hold out the outstretched arm for the reconciliation of those who have been involved in abortion to say there is a way back. Part of humility is telling the whole truth, mm-hmm. which is reconciling those souls that have stepped over the line. So that has to be part of the whole package, part of the whole presentation of the faith.
Shane, thank you very, very much for that call. I hope that was helpful. We go now to Dwayne in New Orleans, listening on 690 AM there. Dwayne, you are up with Father Paul Check. Your question, Dwayne.
Hey, Father Paul Check. I think this is a great topic. My question is, in the Greek translation, is the word used for meek praus or something like that?
You're ahead of me there, my friend. My Latin is average. My Greek is below average. So,
and I noticed you didn't even ask me, Dwayne, which was an excellent choice on your part.
I don't know.
Well, I only asked because I recently heard a talk by Father John Ricardo.
Oh, good man! I know him from the seminary.
Yeah. And he pointed out that the word meek is somehow related to the Greek word praus, which is when the Greeks would go out into the wild and grab these wild horses and they would try to break them to train them.
Right.
Some were truly broken and were only good for carrying burdens, or some were just gotten rid of because they couldn't be broken or couldn't be useful. Mm-hmm. But the ones that were of such high quality that they could be used as war horses, that retained all their strength, all their power, but put it under the control of the rider.
Yeah.
Those were meek, and they were
great story.
Used as war horses.
That's a very good way of saying it. That's a very good way of saying it, because unfortunately to our ears, meekness sounds like something's missing and that it's not a strength, but it's a lack.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. So this etymology that you provided to us is very good and helpful.
Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you very, very much. Again, 888-31-TRUTH, our number. The caller before, Dwayne, with the question about abortion, it does seem to me that, I want your help on this, Father, that we talk about culture war and all that, and we're fighting over all kinds of things, many of them in the sexual realm. Mm-hmm. We want to do good in the public square, but it seems to me that we often, I don't know, the more kind of impassioned we get about that, sometimes we lose the gospel.
Yeah, well, we can lose our balance.
Okay, so.
And we become overly emotionally involved in the argument. And that's why humility and meekness as virtues are indispensable, because they preserve us from losing the right order of things. The emotions are a part of the soul, and they're a vital portion, but they are not to subvert reason and the will. And they can when they get intense.
Yeah. Father Paul Cech is our guest. Our topic, being meek and humble. If you have questions about what it is that Christians see in these virtues, how we understand those virtues, how those virtues are to be lived out, we'd love to have a call from you. 888-318-7884. Or maybe you don't think that you in particular were called to these virtues. Give a call. We'll discuss that with you as well.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey everyone, this is Carlo Broussard, and I'm here to tell you about a very special promotion we look forward to every year, our annual store-wide summer sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. This spectacular online event includes savings of 10 to 25% and more in some cases on every book, track, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry, including my new book, Prepare the Way. With lower prices and a great selection, it's by far the best online Catholic sale of the summer. So log on now and all this month to the shop at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers.
Are faith and science compatible? Are they friends or foes? Catholic Answers Magazine is tackling that question and others with our very special Faith and Science issue, delving deep into what is arguably one of the most debated topics of our day. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 818-487-2011 or going to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. We'll take an in-depth look at the Catholic view of evolution with Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. We'll review the most common misconceptions about how faith and science stand in opposition with Dr. Chris Kazor. And apologist Trent Horn will refute the skeptic's claim that something can come from nothing, plus so much more. Don't miss out on what will be a virtual handbook on one of the most important issues of our day. Call 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine. From Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
I'm Tom Price.
And this is Elizabeth Ficicelli. Tomorrow, Father Edward Looney.
Along with Chris Faddis from Solidarity HealthShare. Join us for Morning Glory, 7 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Father Paul Cech, our guest in studio today. He got out of Connecticut for a visit with the family, right?
Yes.
The
Humanae Vitae Conference.
Yeah, the Humanae Vitae Conference. So yeah. I'm just going to take a quick guess here. You think Paul VI did a fine job with Humanae Vitae?
Sure.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
We tried to do a little bit of coverage of it. Tim Staples came in Friday and talked with us about it a bit. Yeah. And I wonder what you think about this, but looking back on it, I don't think in the subsequent 50 years there has been anything that is as saintly as the subsequent popes were or are, that they had to suffer something like what Paul VI suffered with Humanae Vitae.
No question. It was the last encyclical he wrote, and he was pope for another 10 years.
Yeah.
Look, here's what I would say from my experience, 20 years of priesthood, and the effects and legacy of sexual promiscuity. I mean, there are many effects, but I'm going to suggest these two. Loneliness.
Oh, yeah, right.
And regret. And as powerful as the sacrament of confession is, it doesn't unmake the past. So for those who have not yet stepped into this forum, that is to say, not Catholic Answers Live, but the question of sexual intimacy, if there's any possibility that you could give some reflection to this to avoid the problem especially of regret, but loneliness also, give Paul VI a chance here.
Yeah.
For your own well-being, your own fulfillment of heart, there's enough evidence to indicate that stepping outside the bounds of our God-given nature is going to bring us pain and suffering. Jesus says, please don't do that. Please avoid that, and gives us the helps to do it.
I'm so glad you said that, too, because I do think, at least my perception of it is, you know, around here at Catholic Answers in different places, there is a generation, and maybe they're even under 30, maybe it's some over 30s as well, they're ready to hear this in a way that I think my generation, for example, was not ready. Mm, I mean, in the maybe. 70s, people were like, what?
Yeah.
There was a kind of, I mean, even though my parents, were seven kids, you know, and they appreciated what Paul VI said. I think I don't mean within my own family, but right. In the wider Catholic community,
sure.
There was such a negative reaction.
Well, we were talking about John Fisher earlier and the minority that he was in.
Yeah.
Remember that the papal commission that was established by John the 23rd and then reinforced in attitude by Paul VI, the majority of them told the Pope, change the church's teaching.
Right.
And there were clerics and cardinals and smart and intelligent and thoughtful
really
people, lay people.
People.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But on the other side of that were two wonderful figures, a Jesuit whose name was John Ford, and a Polish man whose name was Karol Wojtyla.
Yeah.
And they both said to Paul VI, don't do it.
Can I tell you one other name that goes on that list? Yeah. Fulton Sheen.
Fulton Sheen. Yes, he did. He was among the bishops who told the Pope no.
Right, yeah. Right. And I think actually this gives us a good segue to go back to talking about humility, because there is an exercise of humility in the sense of Paul VI that it wasn't he didn't take on the role of I'm going to reform God's teaching on this. He
right.
he was the servant of the servants of God. He really was in that instance. What a shining example of that.
He was. So he could read the encyclicals of his predecessors, especially Arcanum by Leo XIII and Casti Canubi by Pius XI. And he knew well what those men had written, what they had said, and what the church had taught.
And given the opportunity, he did not take the easy path.
No, he didn't.
He didn't by any means. And that's humility on
his
part.
It was. Yes, it was. And he suffered a great deal for it. So.
And he was called arrogant. Mm. Which isn't that one of the odd things about a humble person?
Yes.
Is often the critique of them is how
sure.
arrogant of
yeah.
them.
Yeah, well, and it was said of Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, it was?
People well, I mean, in the sense that he was blaspheming.
Oh, yeah.
How dare he say
how
that?
How dare you? Right.
Right.
Right. Indeed. Yeah. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. I think there are many things that we're happy to take on as Christians, certainly to be ethical and moral critics of other people sometimes, but I wonder how great our enthusiasm is for humility.
Well, you know, when I'm here for shows on sexual morality, difficult moral questions, medical ethics, bioethics, homosexuality, you get thousands of calls. Well, maybe not thousands. You get a lot of calls. That's fine. I wish we had a lot of calls today on this topic, because this is so much closer to the core of what it means to be a Christian. I don't mean that sexual ethics and medical ethics aren't important.
No, but this
and
is
this is, and this is where the battles are being fought today. But this is much more interesting, because this brings us much closer into the heart, into the Sacred Heart of Christ.
Well, let's go to one of those calls then. And if you have not called, you still have time to get on the line if you'd like. 888-31-TRUTH. I believe we will get to all the calls we have before the top of the hour. So you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Jennifer in Westfield, Indiana. Listening on EWTN, your question for Father Paul Cech.
Well, my question goes back, to the last hour.
Oh, okay.
You had mentioned that even Jesus was questioning on the cross by saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And the issue I take with that, I am confused then, because my understanding is that what Jesus was actually doing from up on the cross was quoting the Old Testament, saying, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Mm-hmm.
So that all the people standing there could know, this is the Messiah, this is who we've been waiting for.
Yeah. No, well,
I need that explained.
Okay, well, so I think you're right to say that he was reciting the Psalm, and he was fulfilling what the prophecy of the suffering servant from Isaiah 53 would go through and live. But having said that, I think there was something mysterious that we cannot fully explain that was happening in his human soul at that moment, that he was willingly experiencing the condition of fallen man, which is man without God, which mm-hmm. is itself a tremendous mystery, how God himself can enter into that. So Fulton Sheen called it the death of deaths, which is man without God. And Jesus willingly allowed himself to experience that. And so his crying out in saying what the psalmist said has pedagogical value for us. I agree. He's teaching us and he's bearing witness. I agree. But I think there is also something more profound happening in his human soul as he enters into this death of deaths. It's as though the sun is there, but he wills that a cloud or something impede his view of it for the moment, impede his view of God for the moment. And having done that, then the natural or human reaction is to cry out in anguish. And like in the agony of the garden, my understanding of these things is the mystery is so profound that he would be doing those things even if we weren't there to observe and witness.
Jennifer, does that help?
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then. So you're saying he was indeed quoting the Old Testament to let people know, and at the same time was experienced the very human condition?
He's doing two things at the same time. Yes, yes. Yeah. He's doing two things at the same time.
That's the mystery that we won't understand.
Not in this life, no.
Okay.
But he's doing both at the same time.
Right.
Jennifer, if I can make a suggestion to you, our Good Friday show this year, we talked about, we did a full hour on the mental sufferings of Christ, and we talked about Newman. I'm sorry, I couldn't get Newman's name. I was struggling there. We had a very good guest that day. So I would suggest you can just go to the Catholic.com website, go to radio, the calendar, go back to Good Friday. And I really think you will find a great deal that's worthy of a listen on that Good Friday show on the mental sufferings of Christ. Jennifer, thanks very, very much. We had a good guest that day, Father.
Oh, I don't know. He needs work. But that was an insightful question.
Now, we have to explain because now it's going to sound like you're insulting one of our guests. It was Father Paul Chek.
There was nobody else available that day. Look, it was good that she asked that question because I wouldn't want to leave anybody in doubt.
Yeah.
My point in this is to say that Jesus's humanity was not only skin deep. That would make him a Donatist, or that would make the Donatist right, that his humanity was only sort of superficial. No, it was real. It goes all the way down to the bottom of his human soul. And therefore, these experiences that he has cut him.
Yeah.
Like when he says, if only you had known what would bring you peace, and he cries. Those tears are not just for our benefit. Those are real tears.
Yeah, and what a good God he is to do that for us. Wow. We're going to take a break in a quick second. We will get to you if you're on the line. Stay on the line. We are continuing with our store-wide summer sale, but only two more days left. Get 25% off and more on a whole bunch of items over there. But the deal is, for the last 2 days of the summer sale, when you check out, put in the promo code SAVE, and you're going to get 10% more off of the whole order. Just go to shop.catholic.com and save today. Or tomorrow, because then it's over.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
Listening to your program has
really touch my heart. And I just see such love and beauty, not only for Christ, but for people in general in the Catholic Church. And now I feel like I need more. I want to serve God more. I feel it so much that He's given me a gift to serve and to touch people, to love people. What would it take for me to maybe look into the priesthood?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
We are talking about the inner life of Christ today with Father Paul Check, and that the particular mark of that inner life is Christ's humility. If ever there was somebody who didn't probably, he could have been a braggart, but he was meek and humble of heart. He tells us that, and tells us that for a reason, to give us a clue about how we are to live. We go now to Mario in Indianapolis, Indiana, watching on YouTube. Thanks for calling. Mario, your question for Father Paul Check.
Well, Father, as a parishioner, when I hear sermons that introduce the quote-unquote suggestion, I mean verbatim, say suggest, some theologians suggest that the multiplication miracles were simply a way of evincing people that were bringing food to share it, as opposed to what seems to be contextually obvious about this is a genuine miracle performed mm-hmm. by Jesus.
I agree with you.
How to address this repetitive, if it's repetitive, it's difficult for me to assess why someone would assert the validity of the Eucharist and doubt a miracle. And it's almost, what bothers me is many times in the scriptures, and especially in the New Testament, when Jesus says, I'll give you the example of Jonah, when he mentions Jonah,
mm-hmm.
people have this inherent disregard for its possibility of being an actual verifiable physical event,
mm-hmm.
and then go spiritualize it into saying, well, of course, the spiritual principle is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that upsets me.
Well, it should upset you.
I don't know how to
upset that. Well, I think it should upset you, and it's good that it upsets you, because those things are contrary to the truth. And the more important the truth, the greater our commitment should be to wanting to hold to it. Well, the miracles that Jesus performs fall into a few different categories, as you know, but the purpose of the miracles is to validate for the people who were there and for us Jesus' claim to divinity. And if we take those miracles away, then we undermine a very real path to belief. And, by the way, at the same time, we undercut our understanding of the sacraments, because the sacraments are the modern-day miracles, or the miracles that happen today in this church that you and I are able to participate in because of the priesthood. So we cut the legs out from under us with regard to the forgiveness of sins and the confection of the Eucharist, which are greater miracles than the feeding of the 5,000 on the hill of the Transjordan. So I think you're right to be unhappy. I think you speak to the homilist in charity and peace. You write a letter. You quote the catechism. You quote the lives of the saints. If that doesn't seem to work, well, then you write a letter to the bishop and you say, I don't understand why in this particular parish we aren't being told that the miracles of Christ are something that we believe in. And then maybe you have to change your parish if you continue to listen to things that you know are not right, so that doesn't upset your spiritual life. But you're right to be unhappy about something that's contrary to the truth.
Mario, does that give you a path forward with that, with your experience?
I've always maintained as a person that one of the validity, how God continues, I understand the miracle of the Eucharist and the miracle of the sacrament of reconciliation through the magisterium of the church and the authority that Jesus laid down for the apostles and the people that come after them. However, I also believe in active, the miraculous, when people are canonized, people are looking for miracles. And it's one of the ways I've always explained to people how God continues to validate the His church.
Well, Mario, yeah. The thing, as Catholic people, we believe in miracles. As a matter of fact, it's one of the most basic Catholic beliefs. So you have all, you're not going to get anything but support from us.
From
on
your
that.
Friends here at Catholic Answers.
Yeah, and yes. I am grateful for your call because I know that there is a kind of Catholic Catholic expression that would seem to deny the miracles. But the church doesn't deny those miracles.
No, she validates them for right. us. And that's why they're part of Scripture.
So don't feel alone. Don't feel alone in that at all. 888-318-7884, the number. We go now to Carl in Ohio. Nope, Carl is not there. I apologize. We go to Patricia in Houston, Texas, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM satellite radio. Patricia, your question for Father.
Wasn't Jesus self-promoting? And I'm just wondering, how do we ever get anywhere if we never self-promote? Because Jesus was saying, follow me, follow me, follow me. I'm the way, I'm the truth. Isn't that a way of self-promoting?
I suppose sort of in the modern context, you could say that he is somehow drawing people to himself promoting a certain way of life. But the difference, of course, is going to be that Jesus Christ is true God as well as being true man. Therefore, he is our creator and our redeemer. He is the Logos, and he is also agape, which is charity and love. And therefore, he is the only one who can say these things in humility and without self-promotion. So he is not calling attention to himself for his own aggrandizement. He's calling attention to himself for the truth that he is God and for our own fulfillment of heart. When we self-promote or when we call people to ourselves, the motives may not be so pure, and we can't fulfill hearts in the way that only Christ can.
Patricia, thank you very much for that call. But wouldn't you, Father, when economic realm, for example, in my neighborhood, whenever a house goes up for sale, this husband and wife, their sign goes up there, and they tell you about how they're honest and they're going to be helpful to you, and that is self-promotion.
Yeah.
But that strikes me as that's not a contradiction to the virtue of humility.
No, I don't think it is either. I mean, there's a fair kind of advertising or validation of someone's skills or experience that helps them to win their livelihood.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's objectionable. Again, I think we have some confusion around the term humility, which, while there is an aspect of self-effacement to it, of course, St. Teresa of Avila would say that if you deny the gifts that God has given to you,
yeah, right.
That's not being humble, actually.
No. Right.
Right?
Right. Fair enough. Josiah on YouTube wrote the following, Father, this is not a call. How should a Catholic Christian follow Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus tells us to turn the other cheek?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a tough challenge for us, and it involves the virtue of meekness, which is the virtue that helps us to calm and restrain the tendency to want to retaliate.
Mm.
And Jesus willingly, in the Passion, in the moments particularly leading up to the crucifixion, accepted these things without any kind of disposition towards wanting to retaliate. So we can absorb a lot, and we can take a lot for the love of God after his example. I'm not talking about the spouse who's being abused or the child who's being abused, and we certainly can't turn someone else's cheek for them, right?
Right.
So let's make that point clear. But is there a level of this sort of thing that we can absorb and take for the purification of our souls and for growing in humility and Christ-like charity? Yes. Yes.
How do these things exist alongside one another, both this Christ teaching that we should turn the other cheek and the clear teaching of the church and of I think, basic common sense that we can defend ourselves, we can defend others?
Yeah, there's no conflict between those two. Life is a gift,
mm-hmm.
and it has been given to us on trust and in stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can freely renounce it for a good motive, okay, the commanding officer who I worked for who dove on the hand grenade.
Right.
But he wasn't trying to be a suicide.
Yeah.
His choice was to protect someone else. So he could freely renounce his right to life in that way for a higher good. which was self-giving. I can renounce my right to defend myself for a higher good. That's not quite the same thing as pacifism or right. conscientious objection. Those things are going to be different.
But turn the other cheek still is, like, that's a commandment. Like, we really are yes. required to turn the other cheek, though.
Yes. Yes, that's right. So there must be something in Christ's example where he did that. Now, there are other occasions. I don't know that that turn the other cheek is something that must be employed in every circumstance. At the service of the truth, we can say things that need to be said mm-hmm. to correct someone's misunderstanding, to, or at least to try.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that that isn't, remember, that when the commandments are given to us in the Sermon on the Mount, they're part of a fabric and a tapestry, and it's not necessary for us to only hold onto one thread. We have all of the gospel teaching to be able to hold on to. And so in that case, it's kind of a harmony or symphony. But the first commandment is not turn the other cheek. It's love God with all our mind, heart, soul, and strength.
Yes, right. Yeah. Okay, so how do I get it? So you've let's say I've been listening now for an hour, and I have to most of what you said. I want to have this virtue of humility. I accept Christ's invitation to be like him, to learn from him, and he's meek and humble of heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of I'm a little full of myself. I'm a little, I'm like anybody else, I suppose. How am I going to get this virtue of humility?
Well, the litany of humility is a good prayer to pray, but the prayer itself isn't going to do it. The strongest motivation for us to acquire the virtue of humility is going to be the love of God and the desire that we have to live the way Christ lived. And for me, the strongest meditation is going to be on the Passion.
That'll do it.
Yes.
So
we're back to your Good Friday show.
Yep, right.
The strongest motivation for me is that I am nothing, that God created me in love, that I am the beneficiary of all his generosity, that I have title to nothing, and that without him, I'm misery. And in modern parlance, a mess.
Have you found in your own life and ministry that there are some people who you feel humble around? Not because I mean they're putting you down or something, but they're a humbling presence.
Yes. Yes.
What is that in a person?
Well, and that's not because they're smart or successful or accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're good and they radiate goodness. And it's not just natural goodness, but there is something at work in them supernaturally, which can be seen. Those are the people who are striving for holiness.
Do you think that Christ wants that to be at work in us? Is that part two of why he calls us to be humble?
Of course.
So that we can assist others.
So we know that by baptism we achieve an identity, or we gain an identity, and then we get a mission. So there are two pieces there.
Okay.
Okay, so identity and mission.
Yep.
Disciple, and now admissio, the mission to the world. So how are we going to be most effective in the mission? It's going to be in the Christ-like disposition of the heart. It's not what we say. It's not what we do. It's not a program. It's all those things are important. Excuse me, I'm not undermining them. But the strongest evangelization tool, means, mm-hmm. method, is going to be the saint.
And it's not prideful to want to be a saint
no.
in order to radiate that.
No,
in order to
for the love of God and for the salvation of souls. No, of course not.
It's okay to want to be good so that goodness will spread, because goodness is kind of contagious.
Augustine says man became God so that God Augustine says God became man so that man could become God. That's striking.
Yeah, think?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Almost scandalizing.
Right. And God tells us so much about himself when he says, come to me, all you
who are burdened, and I will give you rest.
Yeah.
And the path to that is humility and meekness.
Again, Father Paul Cech, thanks so much. Really enjoyed
You're welcome.
My fourth interview with you today. May we have your blessing.
Yes, through the intercession of Our Lady, who is Queen of Peace, who is a perfect humility and cause of our joy, through the intercession of our most chaste spouse, St. Joseph, may the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit come down upon you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Father. Remember, tomorrow, Tuesday, that means open forum, 2 hours of open forum. If you have questions about the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church. You want to know what we believe and why we believe it? Give us a call tomorrow. We'll be here then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.